Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Get big savings on big equipment for one big day at United Rentals on South Frontage Road in Columbus, Thursday, October 2nd from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Hey, this is Tiffany Blackston. Call me today for the equipment you're looking for. 662-889-2528. Can't wait to see you on October 2nd.
Lance.
Good morning, Garden Mama.
I know that, it's a pleasure to be here. You know, this is one of those things that... Frankly, makes the world go round. It's me getting a chance to talk on the radio and to bring what I've been doing and hear about what everybody else has been doing. So I'm really happy to be here. Mike in Houston has already weighed in this morning with devil's trumpets that are as big as his hands and bigger. They're really pretty flowers. Now, you know, of course, the ones that hang all the way down are angel trumpets, and the ones that stand up are usually considered devil's trumpets or datura. But they're just beautiful, beautiful plant, and I appreciate seeing that this morning. Looks like you have some insect damage to your leaves, but it's no big deal. Obviously, the flowers are not affected at all. That's just beautiful. And you, too, can send us pictures of your plants, what's in blooming. I did ask that question in social media yesterday, because of the great big old carrion flower that's blooming here. We've been looking at those for this whole summer, but this one is so big and has a lovely lovely flower to it, and also a really, really pretty bud coming up around it. So that'll be along here. I think I sent it. If I didn't, we'll see. We'll get it up here next week. But at any rate, lots of things to talk about today, lots of things to think about. And I don't know, Lance, I it's hard to know where to start today, but I think I'm going to start with the most interesting, perhaps. It may give us an opportunity to figure out something else that we're going to do. Have you seen the petunias that glow in the dark?
No.
No? Well, they're pretty cute, and they really do glow in the dark, and they're very unusual, and people think one thing about them, or they think another thing about them, some of it positive, some of it not so positive. I personally think it's just one more way of manipulating color and flower, and, you know, as long as everybody knows that's what we're doing, this didn't occur naturally, y'all go right ahead. Well, there's a better one. Uh-oh, what did she say? Everybody's so crazy about those petunias. Scientists have now created glow-in-the-dark succulents. They're nightlights.
Wow.
That's right. They're nightlights. I want one.
Is it basically like the tail end of a, you know, a firefly type of
material? Well, it has that effect, but the material is phosphors. They're the same things that make anything underwater glow, you know, and that those things that we hear about, the phosphorescent effect that we talk about from time to time. In this case, they're actually inorganic compounds that are things like europium and dysprosium, the strontium, aluminates, all that kind of stuff that I don't really know that much about. I mean, I know that it exists, but I can tell you that when it's all properly combined and injected into the succulent, they glow. That's pretty cool. It's interestingly enough, they've tried, I guess water's involved, because they've tried so many different things, and it turns out that the succulents really do absorb the phosphorescence the best, and that's why they're going to be marketed as night lights. You can actually have them in your house. That's fun. I mean, I just think that's great.
How cool is that?
I mean, I want one that says Garden Mama on it.
I can't imagine that, like, kids won't be absolutely fascinated with something like that.
Got to be. I mean, they're colorful. They glow in the dark. They're not really that expensive to produce. Who knows what they'll be by the time they get to the shelf somewhere? I don't know. But Cell Press is reporting to us that the researchers built a wall of 56 glowing succulents that you could read a book by. Now, I don't want 56. You know, two or three would be plenty.
I'll take all of them. As long, yeah, I might kill them accidentally, but the brown thumb, but... I would love to absolutely have two or three of those in the bedroom. And I'm sure my dogs would try to eat them.
Wouldn't that be fun, though? Now, Bill has just sent the glowing petunias. He's got them in Poplarville. They're so pretty. They just look so ethereal. You know, they have this just, it's a foreign, it's haunted. I mean, come on, think about Halloween. This is going to be great.
It reminds me of something that would be at the bottom of the ocean.
That's exactly the same stuff. The phosphorescent worms and things that we always read about, that's exactly the same stuff. So, fun things. I promised that I was going to be a little bit more practical today. I said I was going to talk about greens, and I really am. I really will. I have a lot to talk about on that subject, as you might imagine. If you start now, if all you like to eat are greens, I don't think that applies to anybody, but if it turned out that that's all that you liked, you could start right now and plant for 6 weeks and be harvesting at least till Thanksgiving, probably till Christmas, depending on where you live. That's pretty good. Why do we start with mustards first? I think because mustards not only are easy to sprout, mustard greens, you know, things, everything, Florida broadleaf, you know, different varieties, even the tender greens that are sort of spinachy can also be planted now. I think we begin with the mustards simply because they can sprout easily in the heat, and they also are not so affected by it. Many times if we plant the turnip greens first, people have discovered that they end up being the trap crop for all of the insects at this particular point in the summer. But the mustard are not as attractive to them, so if you kind of move towards the turnips, you may have a better opportunity to get them to actually grow. After that, it's collards. Collards really do take, and kale as well, both need a little bit cooler weather to be as good as we want them to be. And so that's why we put them at the end of the greens planting. But the greens, you know, people, I know there's people out there right now planting all of these things at one time, and a lot of it will do beautifully well. But if you're only going to do one a week, start with mustards, then go to turnips, and then take yourself up into Georgia collards or whatever collard you're growing, and then on to maybe kale. You might like red Russian kale. You might like one of those bigger, some of those giant kales. You might even like the kales that grow in a container and don't get to be but about 5 inches tall. All of those are just delicious and so good for you. But after we roll through that set of greens, then we're going to talk about beet greens and Swiss chard greens. By the way, if you don't like rainbow chard, and a lot of people just don't, remember that Lucullus, if you look for one that's going to be have white stems and green leaves, that's going to be Lucullus, and it's a delicious. Those stems are so tasty, but the chard itself is really delicious too. We move on through spinach in September, and of course, here comes the lettuce. So whether you're doing sort of those soft head lettuces, you know, butter crunch or one of that, or whether you're doing leaf lettuces. I like oak leaf lettuce better than anything else probably, so that's probably what I'll plant this year. Then you move into the romaines and whatnot, and you've got so many choices in there. You can plant mesclunes if you like a mix of things. All of those pieces, you know, are really making a lot of sense. Now, here's my main tips about seeding in your garden. Get out your tiller, get out your shovel, get out your little bitty rake, get out your big rake. You're trying to create an area that is raised up enough so that it can drain in case of a heavy rainstorm, and also slope towards the area around it, but with a flat surface on top, so that you don't end up having seeds that just go directly from being sowed on top of the row to falling into the side of it when it rains. So make yourself a flat place on the top of the row or the top of the bed or the top of the container. Give yourself that opportunity. And then if you find that even after you have dug up that soil and turned it and twisted it and done everything you're going to do to it, it's still not as good as you'd like it to be to plant seeds in, that's when you go ahead and put down a layer of whatever your favorite seed starting or potting soil or something that's smaller particled just on the top of that row to seed into. We seed in. Try not to get things too crowded because everybody hates to thin. But after you've seeded, many things want to be covered up in order to sprout, but these are tiny, tiny seeds. So you may want to just barely cover them and then even put something on top of them. If it is lettuce, you want it to have light, so you can use a piece of plexiglass or something like that, and use that so that you're getting, they're keeping them moist, but you're also getting them the light that they either need or don't need so that they can sprout. Obviously, remove that as soon as you get the seeds to sprout. And don't forget, thinning may seem like an enemy, but it's really good for you and the plants, too. So that's the basics on seeding, but particularly seeding greens. I want you to also think about setting up a sprinkler once those greens are established, or as they are getting established, I should say. If we're not having regular rainfall where you are, then you are going to need to turn on a nice overhead sprinkler and give them some water so they don't freak out and die in the middle of the day. It's still hot, and you would like for them not to crisp up on you. Okay? Okay. Beautiful morning glories. Oh gosh, those red morning glories are just lovely, just lovely. And yes, I believe that you are the cat daddy. There seems to be a literally a herd of cats that you are herding this morning, Mike. That's delightful. That's really fun. Now, I have to say that there are an awful lot of things to do in the garden besides plant greens, but I'm very fond of doing that. If you're looking at supertalk.tv right now, you're seeing my tender green mustard, which you will see sold as tender green mustard spinach or tender green or mustard spinach. I mean, there's just any number of things. It is a mustard, but it is a smooth-leafed mustard that many people will grow as an early spinach or as even as a spinach substitute. We think about those summer growers. We think about Malabar. We think about New Zealand spinach, neither one of which are actually spinach, but both of which can serve its purpose in cooking and whatnot. They're different. This one is actually going to taste a little more mustardy, but not as bright and sharp as, say, Florida broadleaf mustard or some other solid green mustard. This is going to be a little bit smoother, a little bit darker tasting, therefore closer to spinach. Really, really nice. Beautiful, beautiful plant. Oh, my goodness. Lance, do you have iguanas? You have a lot of animals.
I tried that back in the college era, but you know, he didn't make it. He didn't want to eat. But I did have a friend that had a full-grown one, and his name was Babka, I think, or it was after like the some Polish long jumper.
Oh, okay.
We named him after because he would jump. I mean, he could fly across the room. And but he was a lot of fun.
I can't say the person that wrote the article I read obviously does not like iguanas because the description of them were basically that they look like old people who've had too much to eat sitting up in the tree. And I can't disagree with that. His language was a little more colorful than mine, as you might imagine. But there's a fella named Mike Kimmel. And Mike Kimmel is a social media star. I do not follow him. I do not know him on there. I've only read about him. But I am going to go look him up one of these days because I'm kind of curious. He has taken it upon himself to attempt to hunt iguanas and pythons to get them out of Florida because the ecosystem is being destroyed. And that's true. Okay? Somebody needs to. They have seasons for it. They have chefs trying to get you to eat these things. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on. But as we know, each time they update the climate maps and that temperature range takes us a little bit farther north, the warmer temperatures go a little farther north, that brings the pythons, you know, they're headed for you wherever you are. They're well in Florida and they're headed north. So it's something to consider because the pythons, of course, live mainly in the Everglades, but they eat native birds and deer, and they eat things like the endangered Key Largo wood rat, which I can't really say I'm a fan of, but I realize that everything has a place in the ecosystem. So I don't know how to tell you this, but pythons even eat alligators. So the idea of going to catch them or move them or do something about them has caused the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to spend more than $6 million on them since 2005, and there's still too many pythons. So Mike Kimmel figures the way to take this. It's this article from Andrew Zaleski, which was in Bloomberg News, by the way, in case you want to go look him up. He takes this guy hunting. Mike Kimmel takes this guy, this writer, hunting. And he said, four of us had been riding in a 20-foot John boat when we spotted the iguana chilling atop an embankment. They cut the engine. They glided into the bank. And Mike Kimmel said to him, well, hook him. He looks like he's wise, though. Like, in other words, if you've seen him, he's seen you. So this is, for somebody who had never hunted before, this was quite an adventure.
I'm sure. Hunting iguanas.
Yep. And on a good day, this guy apparently can take out 30.
Wow. So, well, I know they pay pretty heavily down there for the python removal.
Well, for example, our friends, the iguanas, of course. Gosh, I hate to have to say this because they are cute in some cases. But they are really they are working laboratories for salmonella.
Okay.
And so as they go places and leave what they leave, the salmonella problem gets to be bigger and bigger. They also eat the citrus trees that are in Florida, which is if we didn't have enough problems there. And another creature that I didn't really care about, the endangered tree snail, is one of their favorites. But they make huge burrows. And, for example, they collapse sidewalks. They take down canal banks. These iguanas are a fierce posse.
Yeah, it sounds like if you're in the dirt working business or concrete, you may want to have a few of those caged.
You might need them. It's like getting the goats, you know, to mow the levee. You might need the iguanas to help you out with this. But Palm Beach in 2020 paid $1.8 million to repair the damage from iguanas. So you can see why they're willing to pay a bounty on these creatures. It's hard for me to celebrate. Because you're not going to be able to wipe out the species, okay? That's just not going to happen. But it's hard for me to celebrate someone who really does want to, like this guy does. However, I understand. I see it. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you'd find somebody that likes to eat them.
Well, and unfortunately, that's a big deal among the chefs in Florida, is the attempt to get, you know, everything from clownfish to all of these invasive species. It's kind of like trying to get people to eat nutria. It just doesn't go real far.
It's not happening.
Doesn't go real far.
There's plenty of them to eat, apparently.
Oh, yeah. You know it. Oh, those pole beans are so cute. That's really beautiful. This is Kathy and Vaughn. And that's just gorgeous. That little froggy has found a place to live. I like that. That's the sort of thing you wish we still did note cards. Because this would be a great note card. Somebody would love to get that picture in the mail. Really super. These are the pole beans we talked about before that had not made it. And so I think maybe they're still okay. They look beautiful. And I think they probably will. She hasn't said, but at least we found a nest for the frog.
Frog is definitely happy.
Very happy.
It's been sitting there a minute because it's almost gotten the color perfect, right?
Yeah, he's ranged in. Yeah.
He's got a green screen. He's using
very, very ranged.
Using his green screen well.
Very smart. Very smart. You know, I was thinking about there's a picture in today when you look at supertalk.tv. I was thinking about why people don't eat a particular vegetable. And if you are somebody who has just been overwhelmed with the number of people that want you to eat beets and eat beet capsules and drink beet juice, and if you've tried any of it, you may have the same opinion that I have, which is that it all basically comes, all of those processed products that they want you to take for various and sundry causes really have sort of the same quality that canned beets have, which is to say, I don't want them ever. And I'm sorry for y'all who love them, but they've been trying to feed me those things my whole life, and I have never appreciated them. However, that same nasty red beet, peeled, sliced up, tossed into a skillet with a little bit of garlic and some of its own greens. Come on now. That's food. That's actual food. So
you don't want the capsule and you don't want canned beets, basically.
No, I really don't. I don't want the liquid ones either. So anyway, I think I hear music under me. Is that right?
That's right. I didn't want to interrupt you. I was enjoying your beet.
Oh, it's our friends.
Yeah.
All right now. Say hello to the Delta this morning. We'll be right back.
Ride my seesaw, take this place on this train, just for me.
Hey there, homeowners! Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.
My heart starts to tremble, whenever you're
a nice morning we're having today. Speaking of May, do you know that Mary's night bloom in Sirius began blooming, I think she said May the 4th.
It was back in May, yeah.
Uh-huh. And we are now on the third round of blooms on her plant. She sent in pictures this morning. Mary, you win.
Yeah, those are beautiful.
You absolutely win. This is spectacular. Now, when you look at this picture and you go, well, mine doesn't look like that. That's right. Yours doesn't, because yours isn't blooming as good as Mary's is. Trust me, I know. Mine's not either. I may have one flower, but, you know, not all of this. 12, 14, now it's 11, now there's 8 on Thursday. I mean, good grief. Anyway, point being, when you see it, you will see that it's a little bit yellow. And this is the indication that the plant is using all of its nitrogen up and getting it into those flowers. After they finish blooming, whenever they do stop, obviously is the time to fertilize night blooming cereus. But when you see that yellowing, you can actually be happy about it because it does mean that your plant's acting very efficiently. Oftentimes, for example, if it was a tomato plant and the lower leaves were yellow, we'd say you got to give it some nitrogen right now or the plant will stop growing. That's not the case with night blooming cereus. It's already got everything. It's a succulent leaf. You know, it's got all that stored up in it. So what we can see is that it has already given it up to the plant. And that's really how, I mean, it's just perfect. Just really perfect. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Another great good morning from Lee County. JD says, speaking of critters, how do I get rid of moles? They're tearing up the beds and the front lawn. Oh, JD, you're not going to like this because I'm going to tell you to dig up some more. But here's what happens. The moles are there because they are looking for something to eat. And what they like to eat better than anything else and what there is in great numbers at this time of year in under most of our lawns and in some of our flower beds are white grubs. So if you go next to the sidewalk or the driveway, one of the indications that you have white grubs is that the grass right there next to the driveway or next to the sidewalk doesn't quite do as well as the other, no matter, even though it's had the same fertilizer, the same mowing, everything. So when you take a trowel and turn over a little bit of that, oftentimes in that top inch or two of soil, you're going to find the white grubs. And that's why the moles are digging around in your yard, because that's a delicacy to them. That's what they're looking for. So the good news is that you can treat for the white grubs, and the moles will go to your neighbors.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
I just experienced walking over to the neighbors. It's, backyard's real dark, real shady, very, soft. And I went over there to get a ball that that Hawk had bounced off his head and gone over the fence. And I went over there, and I stepped down, and I went into one of those mole type of tunnels, you know, and I noticed they'd been going, but they haven't gotten over to my yard. I don't want them to, but it's on the other side of the fence. Mm-hmm. Would earthworms in any way be a delicacy to them? Because we have plenty of earthworms. I didn't know if it's just the white grub, because we've had that conversation.
I'm going to tell you what I will tell you, and the truth is that if it's just like a deer, if the mole is hungry, it's going to find something to eat.
Because I did kind of turn the ground over, and I know if I'd have kept working, it was real kind of dirty and soft. I didn't want to get too muddy, but I wanted to look for the white grubs.
Never a bad idea to stomp down any of those runs, because that does slow them down and makes them have to go work a little harder someplace else. And it's also a way to tell where they are active, because if you stomp on the runs and you come back the next day or two and it's popped up again, then you know that they're right there.
Well, and
you
I
found
had a,
where they are.
A black female cat years ago that used to love sitting there waiting for them. She would, you know, she knew
some
what they
do.
Were up to.
Some do, yes.
But my two males, they don't care. They don't care about the moles.
Well, they have other things to worry
about.
Yeah,
they have other things on their mind.
You know, and here's how to get rid of them, other than stomping down the runs. There are a couple of different approaches. One is there's commercial product. You go to the co-op or the garden center or the big box or whatever, and you tell them you need the stuff to take care of white grubs to put in your lawn and your flower beds, and they will give it to you. It's a product. If you want it to be a longer term but slower control, you start with milky spore fungus, which is the organic alternative to the other products. However, it has to be applied this fall and then again in the spring, and it's not immediate the way the others are. The others are a much faster result. So if you have a big problem, you may want to go ahead and take the fast step now, and then if you see another problem developing, because it will be much smaller, of course, you've gotten rid of most of the food source, then you might do the milky spore next spring and next fall. So that's the best advice I have on that one. Let's see now. Ken's in Jackson. Yeah, we are nerds. We all like to our nerd in propagation. By the way, that was a really nice clip that you posted about propagation. Thank you, Lance. I ran across that in the Super Talk feed. That looks really good. This is following up to the rubber tree cuttings, wondering, they were started 2 weeks ago and within a week had big roots big enough to pot up. You caught them at just the right time. And these are beautiful. This is going to be a magnificent plant. I do love, a couple of them actually, I do love rubber trees because they are very responsive, like most ficus are. And our biggest issue is that we have to not baby them too much. Just get them to root and go ahead and get it potted up. You've also got, another of the wandering Jews. I honestly do not know if it's Zebrina. I don't know exactly. I don't know which name it has, but I'll try and look and see if I can find out. By the way, your two plants in the nerve plant department are just beautiful. Really lovely too. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you sharing all that with us. When you pot up that ficus, be sure that you're giving it a well-drained soil and a container with a hole in the bottom because they demand that. Oh, beautiful, Brenda. The Sirius, just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. Interestingly enough, this was back in July. She had just put up a bat house. And today, by the way, is International Bat Day. So thank you very much for reminding me of that, Brenda, because I had forgotten that was today. Thank you. Your Sirius is just gorgeous. I love that. This is the one that we're growing is Hookery Eye, in case you know one from the other. This one stays open a little bit longer in the morning, and it has its most scent right before dawn. It's a beautiful plant. Beautiful plant. Good morning. Good morning, Paula. Thank you so much. You're so sweet to us. Say such sweet things. Thank you. You may not want to know this one. Okay, now. Today, my friends, can I complain? Sure, I can complain. I have the microphone and you're not going to turn it off. I am really uncomfortable when people wish happy birthdays to people who are dead. I'm just weird that way. I understand that it's heavenly birthday and it would be this many years and this and that. It's just hard for me, okay? I would have a lot to keep up with, for one thing, if I tried to do that. But today I'm going to break that to tell you that today is Frankenstein Day. And I couldn't figure out why would that be August the 30th. So I started looking around and scratching around. Well, it turns out that she, her own self, Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley, who wrote the book, was born on August the 30th, 1797. The book, of course, was published in 1818. And we have been fascinated by Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus, which is the subtitle to that book, ever since. Do you know that we made the first film about it in 1910? And no one actually knows how many movies there have been because there have been so many. Some of them made before they could maintain the film process, you know, to hold on to it. So they have some scripts and they have some old stuff, but they don't have everything. Isn't that amazing? That's why we celebrate Frankenstein today. If you haven't ever had a Frankenstein costume for Halloween, I suggest that you make one beginning today. It'll be a wonderful, you'll be tickled, and your friends and neighbors will never quite get over it because it can be a very, very dramatic headset, you know, to do that. So by all means, give yourself that opportunity.
The bolts on Frankenstein, that's like his electrical device, right? That gives him the,
yes, I believe that's where they plugged him in,
right.
Yes.
That's where he gets charged up.
We try not to talk too much about how many different body parts, people's body parts were involved. That's why they generally have him in a long, dark suit. Because we don't really
I always
know.
Love the head, though. The big bolts coming out of it. Like, I guess that's where you hook the battery charger.
Well, and it you know, every now and then that hairdo comes back into style.
Yes.
You know? So it's quite something. Oh, my goodness.
I was a fan of the Munsters. I don't know.
Sure. What's not to be a fan of? That's fun. We now have a comment. I rose up out of bed like Frankenstein this morning. Thank you from our friends at Sistrunk. Just funny. We all do have references, don't we? When people clomp around, you know, and they're not very graceful, we also talk about them as dancing like Frankenstein because of Peter Boyle in Gene Wilder's version, you know. See? You can sing just like him.
I love that movie.
It's a wonderful movie. Absolutely. And if you don't know who Cloris Leachman is, you need to see this movie because it's one of her best roles. But anyway, it seems kind of random to talk about it until you realize that this was her birthday, and that's why they honor her every year on this particular day. I'd say we should probably, because it is also Cabernet Sauvignon Day, I say you can have a toast to her if you like, you know.
Drink it up.
Oh, my goodness.
Perfect day for it. You got football everywhere.
See? Perfect.
Great day for it.
We are happy about that.
Yeah.
By the way, we are happy about that. Football.
Yes, you got a big game down in your neck of the woods, but it's actually in Clemson. It's just the other Death
it's
Valley.
It's just a big game all the way around. I was thinking about all of that this morning. It's like, gosh, you know, that's all going to be just everywhere, and that's what's going on. Anyway, just really fun. Beautiful comment. This is really lovely. I have a random hole that is not a tunnel in my raised bed. See, now we can't see that because she sent us the picture of these beautiful, beautiful beans on the trellis and everything else, Kathy, but we didn't get a chance to see the hole. Anyway, she says it's at a slant. She added dirt and turned the bed. The next day, the hole was back. Okay, now we all get to play guess. What do you think is digging a hole in Kathy's raised bed? It's not an iguana, I'm pretty sure.
Python. No.
I don't think it's a python.
No, no.
You know, when it gets even anywhere, it could be probably November in Vaughan, and the iguanas would be falling out of the trees, okay, because they don't like cold weather. But
I've heard they do that, actually, just fall
they
out.
They do. Yeah. Oh, they do. I've seen the video. I mean, they go because they are not warm-blooded. Mm-hmm. They're cold-blooded. Their temperature of their blood is dependent on the temperature around them. Y'all know the difference between cold-blooded and warm-blooded, right? Anyway, so when it gets too chilly for them to circulate, they lose their grip and fall off the tree. They come back.
You'd think it would. Oh, did they wake back up? Is my question.
Oh, yeah, they're not dead. Yeah.
They just fall out.
Yeah. Which causes problems for a lot of people. Anyway, just interesting stuff. So I'm gonna say, if we can take out what can make a hole that you would notice that fast, squirrels, armadillos. I've even seen a skunk do it, but you probably would have seen the skunk.
I think it's likely an armadillo or a squirrel because I have a couple of the same almost exact spots in. And now, if you have a dog and there are moles or voles or I would say frogs down in your bed, you could have a dog or a cat that's going after it. I've watched mine do that, and I've watched the cat, too. So it could be a couple of options. Two could be domesticated.
Oh, yeah.
And the others could be the wild creatures.
Well, and there's always other possibilities, but armadillos are just – when I found out I had armadillos, it was because they were 2 inch around. You know how little an armadillo's nose is, but they were in that hole so deep.
Hey, man,
they were 2 inches around, and there was a whole bunch of them. And eventually, when I dug in the middle of it, I didn't find the armadillos, but you could tell they had been there because all the roots were chewed through.
Well, and you can see that it's almost like a cone as it goes down into the ground. That's usually going to be an armadillo. If it's going to be a squirrel, generally you're going to see where it's been digging with its claws versus the armadillo
usually,
who is snooting down in there.
Yeah, so, they're straight ahead. Mm-hmm. They're straight ahead.
So if it's more of a cone shape, it's probably an armadillo, and you might want to just sit out there at night. Get a spotlight and sit there and wait for him because he's coming back. I promise you. I have so many armadillos.
You don't need to sleep or anything.
No, stay awake all night. But you'll hear him rustling around out there at some point.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine about driving in the woods at night, you know, driving in country roads and stuff at night. And when something runs out of the woods, what's it going to be? You know, you can see it flash by. And if it's an armadillo, it will jump up and hit your truck. You know? Other things just run under you, but not that armadillo. Dave from Ripley has sent us the beautiful harvest, y'all. Now, come on. This is sunflower seeds all day long. So pretty. So pretty. Y'all are doing great this morning. Thank you very much. We got a lot to talk about, a lot to do. Stick around now. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Take me back to another morning, to a town so long ago, where the sweet magnolia blossomed, cotton fields were white as snow, catfish shunned was a river hobo, lived and died by the river's bend.
Propane uses for residential include cooking, heating, gas logs, outdoor products, water heaters, landscaping, and manufactured housing. Propane is a trusted, reliable source of energy that is used year-round by more than 60 million Americans. Visit propane.com to learn more. Energy for everyone. Propane. That's propane.com.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional, because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
The best made to...
Oh, my goodness. Alan. Alan, can you still get in your truck? The pumpkins have taken over. These are beautiful vines. The pumpkin looks great, too, by the way. Beautiful flowers. But, oh, what a lot of vines. They go on and on and on, don't they? That's just gorgeous. Thank you for sending that. It's just beautiful. He can't speak anymore. He just says they've taken over, and they have. That's really pretty. Wonderful, wonderful. On a not-so-happy note, the crabgrass has invaded this flower bed. Oh, dear. Can you recommend an effective method of removal without disturbing the other plants? Well, you have to look at this from another perspective. What are you willing to put into that bed? There are natural source products. There are commercial source products. But they're all going to be products that will take anything that they touch and damage it, if not kill it. So this is where we have to use a paintbrush or a rag that has been dipped into the product. Lots of gloves, okay? You won't find this. You'll find this in directions. You won't find this on a label someplace. But what many people do is to take that, for example, if you have a ready-to-use product, you just spray it on the sponge, or if you've mixed up the product, you dip your sponge into it. Most handy to me are the sponges that are intended for painting, that are on a little tiny stick, and they'll be maybe an inch wide or maybe 2 inches wide. 2 inches is usually too much for even for something like crabgrass. But what you're trying to do is apply that chemical, natural source or otherwise, to the leaves that you want to lose, the leaves that you want to die back. Oftentimes that will work. Now, you still have to go in and pull those out, but once the product has taken its work, done its work and taken down the photosynthesizing and the chlorophyll and all that, usually there's very little root left either. So be aware, though, that when you pull them out, you may disturb the other plants in the bed, so be careful with that. But you can do it by simply applying the herbicide, whatever kind you like to use, on that individual plant with a tiny little amount, a sponge or a rag or something that way, okay? Tough question to answer, just because it is so hard to, it's so much easier to say goodbye to it later, you know. I understand that. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. Lyman is picking more cayenne peppers. Good grief. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be able to sit at the table. There's so many peppers. They're just beautiful. Really, really lovely. Now, one of the things he said was that he had planted late. He said that earlier this year when he picked the first batch. Really, with hot peppers, there is not too late. May is great. April's great. June is even good. And there are people putting out pepper plants right now that intend to harvest right at around Thanksgiving or a little bit later. I got to tell you, the next round, though, Lyman, I'm going to let them go red. I'm going to go for the heat. But this, the green cayenne is a very good pepper. It's very tasty. It's got a lot of heat to it, but not nearly as much as the red, of course. But that's, your plants are just beautiful. These are all container grown in great big old buckets. This is beautiful. Really, really lovely. Thank you for that. Really sweet. Let's see, I think I caught up. Did I get all that caught up? Yes, I believe I did. Now, I'm going to tell you something else. Oh, I know everybody says this, but I'm going to say it anyway. People should always listen to the women in their lives, because sometimes we have something to say that's pretty smart. In this case, Betty James, the wife of the guy who invented it, named the Slinky and said, you know what? This would make a great toy because it'll climb downstairs on its own. We need to think about this, and they did. But he invented it for an entirely different reason, as so often happens in this world. Mechanical engineer Richard James, 1943, he was working on springs to stabilize equipment in ships during World War II. All right, in other words, you understand, when if you go on the smallest of boats, you understand that the galley is attached to the wall. Okay, and there's springs there to keep everything from falling over and to give it the opportunity to adjust without destroying itself. Well, if you're building ships for war, obviously you've got to have big, important maneuvers to make that happen, machinations. But you've also got to have springs that are going to keep it all from just destroying itself in motion. So the Slinky and its innovation, he went through apparently dozens, scores of different springs to make this work right, and one of them, not the one that ended up on the ships, but one of them walked down the stairs, and that's where they began. They went to the, he was the founder of the James Spring and Wire Company, and he invented this. Slinky's able to walk, as it turns out. It's 80 feet of spring wire into a 2.5-inch high stack of 98. The loops would be propelled to walk by transferring their energy along that longitudinal wave, okay? In other words, one leads to the next, leads to the next. And, in fact, Slinky was able to walk because the 80 feet of wire loops have zero tension. In other words, they would fall apart as soon as they came together. They couldn't, if you stacked them up, they would still tend to let go and move forward, make that little dome that we think about when we see Slinkies.
Hey, I don't want to interrupt you. We do have a phone call from Dave in Liberty. He had a question about his cone flowers. And
hey, Dave, those are your beautiful sunflowers.
Hello, Miss
Huh? Hey.
Well, they're not too beautiful. A couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week, I sent you a picture, and you schooled me on these sites on to tell what your plants are. You know, and I told you. It came back as a spinach, you know.
And
you schooled me on. Yeah, you remember that?
Yeah, only because I worked for them. Can I tell you that?
Yeah, you did say something about that. Anyway, my question is, when this frost hits this thing, am I supposed to cover it with something that this, you know, what do I do with it for next year?
No. Purple coneflower is hardy. It will die back probably to ground level sometimes. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it'll leave its sticks, or sometimes it'll just leave a couple of leaves at the bottom. But they are perennial. So as long as their roots and crown are able to survive, which they can survive all the way. I mean, they can survive in northern Ohio. So we don't have temperatures that'll bother them where you are. They don't look too good for a few months because they go dormant. But when they come back, they'll be just even prettier than this year probably.
Okay, so but it wouldn't hurt them to cover the roots with a little some pine needles or something for this winter.
Mulch is always good. Mulch is always good.
Okay,
I'm always good in deal. Favor of that. Well, I like mulch because first of all, it keeps everything else from growing around them, so they have a better chance.
Well,
thank you for calling.
It's in a big old kettle pot, you know.
Oh, good, good.
They used to boil a hog's head in to make souse meat and all that.
Sure,
stuff, you know?
Sure. Well, little mulch will be a good thing. The mulch will be a good thing there.
Okay. Well, thank you
Dave.
Kindly.
Good to hear from you. Take care of yourself. You know, that's such a good question, because sometimes we think about container plants and we don't know whether to mulch them or not. And, yeah, it's generally speaking a good idea. I don't like more than about an inch of mulch in a container, but I don't like too much more than that, even out in a garden bed. So I think that's a great way to look at it, something to do, take care of it, make sure that it works out well.
Well, I like the secondary use for the kettle, too. I mean, I would love to have had the hog head, but you know, we can also grow some good flowers in there.
I once grew flowers in a sugarcane kettle, and it was quite lovely. Sure is a lot of trouble with the hog or the sugarcane.
Flowers are much easier.
Flowers are much easier. Much, much easier. Well, I don't have any Cabernet to offer you right now, my friends, but I do have another hour of pretty fun conversational radio, a few green tips and some ideas about one thing and another. I trust you'll stick around. Maybe we can even get back on to International Bat Night, but it's not Louisville Slugger we're talking about here. So stick around. We'll see you in a little bit. This is the Garden Mama Show.
We have one voice, the voice of agriculture. We have one job, growing the products you need every day. We have one mission, fighting for agriculture and rural Mississippi. We have you in mind, caring for your private property rights. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
My bigger dog disturbed the skunk, and I ended up having to wash the dog for 3 days in a row.
That's brutal.
So I got to tell you, I do not have a good suggestion. There's a repellent. There are repellents. I don't know if they work. Somebody needs to tell us. So, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Just something that smells worse than a skunk, is there?
Probably, but I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there. I got to say, oh my goodness. Janet in North Mississippi, this is a good question, and it brings us back to our friends, the hibiscus family. I have a Confederate rose that is not doing well. It lost its leaves. It's not blooming. Here's the key. It's been in the same place for many years in shade beside the house with a little direct sun.
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions? That tree was holding on as hard as it could, but without at least a half a day of sun, and a soil that is going to stay well drained, you know, or decently drained anyway. It doesn't have to drain great, but it has to be able to get, we have to have a situation where the plant can actively grow. And in this case, it can't. So my suggestion is going to be, rather than wait till the end of the fall, go ahead and start taking some cuttings now. If your canes are in good shape, like 3 foot, 3 foot tall or something like that, 2 to 3 feet is all you need. And if it's the tip, that's good. But if the tip is not alive, you know, you scratch it and there's nothing green there, you can go back farther on the cane. But what you want to do is root those canes in water so that next year you can plant a Confederate rose somewhere that it will have a better chance of growing. And in addition to that, you're going to prune this one so that it also will help it if it is able to grow any more in that space. It may just have gotten too shady and the plant is too old. It is a hibiscus. They do not live forever. This is not a sequoia tree. So many years in the same location, sometimes they just play out. But you can generally root their canes, and that will give you a brand new plant of the exact same quality that you had before. Just grow it again. So that's what I would try to do.
We had a couple of updates here on the skunks.
Yes.
I love it. I love when people like Scott and Raleigh give us some super helpful information. It's simple. It's, you know, it didn't require too much. You just go get some mothballs and put it in that skunk hole, and the skunk will not come back.
And don't let your dogs eat the mothballs.
Yeah, exactly. Don't let the dogs eat the mothballs. And then as my question was, is there anything that smells worse than a skunk? And,
we don't want to read that out loud.
A non-living skunk.
Yes, I think this would be a non-living skunk. Yeah. But this person is very interesting now. I have to say, this is between the dead skunk and meeting a couple people touring the Blues Trail from Denmark.
Yes.
You have a pretty interesting life.
Right. Well, and David Bowie mixed in that. And
now,
text
do you know this? I don't think I told anybody this except the one or two people. A brand new thing has happened. They have drawn a constellation in the sky in the shape of David Bowie's lightning bolt.
Ooh.
And it's beautiful. So, just
Iggy
another
Stardust,
little,
huh?
Exactly. Right in there in that world. So let's see now. Lisa's in Clara, Mississippi. What type of fertilizer do I need for my Meyer lemon tree? It froze last year but has grown back like crazy. If it has grown from above the graft and is forming a tree again, that's great. If it's growing from closer to the ground, and particularly if those stems have spines on them now, you know, if they're thorny, you have actually propagated the rootstock that the Meyer lemon was growing on. And I hope that's not the case, because those are not nearly as desirable as the Meyers. The fertilizer that I like for citrus, all citrus, is one of the few things that I keep waiting for the day that they just send me a truckload to, you know, to give away to all y'all, but that hadn't happened and probably won't. But anyway, the folks at Espoma make good fertilizers. You may have, if you hadn't seen any of their other fertilizers, you have seen the ones that are named like Tomatone, you know, in other words, Tomatone and Conifertone and those kind of things. It's a series of fertilizers. In this case, it's Citrus Tone, and it is the best one. It's an organic fertilizer, and it is really, to me, the only one to use, simply because it has put everything, it puts everything that you need in there, and it also produces fruit that is extremely edible and delicious. So that's what I like. See, more skunk stuff. Y'all are great. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate you. And yes, I agree with you about the previous thing that you texted about, but we won't talk about that today.
No, yeah, that's a good one. That was a good week.
All week long. All week long. Goodness gracious. Well, I have to say, I'm going to take this opportunity to tell you all a little something about the world of Katrina and the world after Katrina. As we all know, the anniversary of Katrina was this week, and the anniversary of Katrina actually goes on for a long time after this week, because the recovery is in some places still not what we would like it to be. It's hard to get over that much damage. Waveland is very different than it was, but so is Highway 90, you know, so much of the area. I had the opportunity, the necessity, to help someone evacuate. So I went through a whole lot of contortions right after the storm. But a few weeks after that, which really happened, by the way, because there was no mechanism for evacuating the pets that people had with them. And so that created terrible problems for a lot of people in many places. But I got to tell you, when I took this friend of mine back to New Orleans after things had settled down just a little bit, maybe 3 weeks, I guess, they let people back in. I was astounded that I couldn't find any landmarks. It was that same way after Camille on the Gulf Coast, but I was over that one by this time. It's the same thing again. You can't find anything. You can't see anything. You don't know where anything was because it's not there. And that kind of deficit in our ability to see stuff creates a hard place. It's a difficult one. It's one that's very sad. It's one that is really not going to help us get past stuff or get over stuff or get into the next phase even, because it's just so overwhelming and heart-sickening. So I went for a walk. We got as close as we could to where we were trying to go and went for a walk. And there, next to the light pole, street lights were not working. Stop signs were twisted and bent. everything was terribly torn up. And there blooming was 3 feet tall Ruellia, Mexican petunias, bright purple flowers. So many stems in that space right there around that light pole, you know, where the concrete and the street meets the sidewalk, and there's this little space. And that Ruellia was not going to be taken down. That Ruellia was not going to be defeated. It's also why people don't necessarily want to plant Ruellia in a lovely flower bed, because it'll march right across there and take the space. But purple Ruellia has ever since that day symbolized for me just who we are. We thrive in tight circumstances. You give us a challenge, we'll meet it. You put us in a place where nobody else can imagine, and we'll figure it out. And that's what that plant did for me that day. Later on that day, we took a walk into a neighborhood that had had no power at that point for 3-4 weeks. And people by that time were moving their refrigerators out onto the street to have them hauled off, and it was terrible. Turned a corner, though, there was a wall of star jasmine in full tilt bloom. You couldn't smell the refrigerators anymore. You couldn't smell the destruction. You could only smell the jasmine of that evening. That's another piece of our puzzle. We always have the next thing to look forward to, and we keep those high in our heads. So, yeah, Katrina was terrible. I can tell you I can tell you horror stories. I can also tell you that the resilience of Ruellia and star jasmine are still with me. Long after the pain slows and backs up just a little bit, the power of those two plants to change my heart made an impression, and it worked. And I'm still there today, looking at them in bloom and appreciating them, hoping to always have them in my life, just like y'all. Hope I always have y'all in my life, because this is the best place in the world to be.
You know, I was having this conversation briefly with an artist and photographer yesterday. Just we'd had her on the show, and I shared with her, you know, a couple of images that I'd taken probably a decade ago. And it's amazing the power of an image, whether being stuck in your head from seeing it physically or having that image, that
grabbing
picture,
it,
and
know,
having it on a phone or whatever, but being able to revisit that. I mean, it's to me, the power of that image, you know, and that memory, it stays with you for a long time. It's hard to describe, I think, what through devastation, let's say.
Yeah.
You see something beautiful.
We look for our touchstones.
Right. Yeah, and so those things stay with you. And in times like that, you know, there is beauty. There's that sunrise you catch, or it's that the flowers you see that are resilient, and it's the
spirit, the kindness of people.
It's just on
that same trip. I don't play it as part of the trip necessarily, but there was one panini machine working, so everybody had paninis.
You can get paninis there for a bit.
It could run off the generator.
That's awesome. Yeah, I had one of those 100-foot orange extension cords plugged into one of the types of three-prong plugs you plug into your car. You know, so I was running microwave, things like that, off the truck for about a week. It worked.
I have a friend in another part of South Louisiana who is, as she says, going solar because she wants to be able to store her energy. Yeah. And it's a smart move. You know, when any option you can give yourself is important and is wise. So that's all I have to say. Now,
do you have any favorite, as far as that era, as we've been revisiting Katrina all week? And, you know, there's always the stories of the devastation. And as you said, the landmarks that were gone, people just like, where am I? You know, and not being able to find your way in a devastating thing. But was there something that really stuck out to you about, you know, the people that maybe you were around, or, you know, that community spirit? Because it always seems that it was there, you know, even in the worst times.
Yes, the care and concern for pets and animals that were either abandoned or were being tried to be keeping them, you know. Some people were pet sitting, like houses full of pets, waiting for people to come back. And their generosity and their kindness struck me as well. That they would literally, there was no place to buy any food, and they would manage to call somebody to, you know, airlift in some dog food. You know, just the lengths that people are willing to go to take care of their pets when they were not even really able to take care of themselves has always impresses me and impressed me very much during that time. I will say, too, though, that, you know, watching trees bend over is never something that you forget. I'm going to go all the way back to Camille now, and there was flying fish on the median on Highway 90 and driving up to my great aunt's house and seeing it gone. Her house was one of the ones on Highway 90 that was torn completely apart. The tornado within the eye wall went from there all the way back to Pass Road. So there was a stretch of just devastation, and that's where I had spent my childhood. So that
it's funny you said my mother spent a lot of her childhood in the summers. Down there, my grandmother was an artist, and
we were so lucky.
Oh, she would, you were very. They loved it. They rented a little cinder block place back when you had the kind of the bungalow type places,
sure.
They'd stay down there, and my grandmother would paint, and go over to the Ocean Springs to the community and do her thing, and my grandfather would kind of work up in McGee at his dealership, and come down on the weekends, and I was as a kid growing up with Camille in the background. Just as you'd go to the coast and point out things that weren't there anymore. And I know that Katrina,
right.
you have the same thing.
There's the same thing since Katrina. And that's part of our lore. That's part of who we are. It's part of why we tell the stories we tell, And not everybody gets a chance to do that. We're lucky in that, too, in that we listen to each other. So. That's part of it. I'm not going to. I can't even begin to talk about without breaking into tears the actual devastation and whatnot and the losses that are so personal. But there are. I'm not one who necessarily believes that there's a reason for everything, but I do believe everything has a reason within it. And part of the bringing together of all the people is what happens after the storm. So it is powerful. And we hold on to those images both in our heads as well as in our cameras. It's important. This is a really difficult segue, but I'm going to go right back to a good question, okay? By the way, that fern is still one of the most beautiful ones that we've seen all year. So that was in August. But I know you have discussed it before, but what are your thoughts on pesticides that say they are safe for flowering plants and their impact on butterflies and hummingbirds? Well, you have just come to the core of my work, so thank you for giving me the chance to explain what I think, what I know. There are insecticides that are from natural sources. There are natural predators. There are natural attackers that can take on a problem in your garden, an insect problem or a pest problem of any sort, fungus or something like that. And only be right there for a very brief length of time. That's oftentimes what happens in nature. The ladybugs move in, they eat the aphids on this plant, but they don't stay there for very long. They go on and do their job someplace else. Okay, so if we think of it as a necessity and being the opportunity to do something with a short afterlife, that's what natural source pesticides are generally about. For example, if you spray pyrethrin to kill aphids and you time it so that your pollinators have already come through the yard that day, by the time they come back the next day, they're not going to run into that particular chemical and you'll probably kill some aphids. It's also the reason why we don't spray sometimes. For example, if I know that if the squash is just starting to bloom and I haven't covered it up, I'm probably not going to cover it up, even though I may end up with a problem with a squash vine borer laying an egg there. Okay, so we don't always try to exclude, but many, many times we do try to exclude. Sometimes that's even useful for the skunk. If you put wire cloches over that raised bed, the skunk will go find somewhere else. They're very opportunistic. And the squirrels will too. So all of those things work together to control the pests in our gardens. However, let's go all the way to the other end of the spectrum. If you have a crepe myrtle tree and it was planted by your grandmother and it is the most beautiful tree or perhaps the only tree in your front yard and it gets crepe myrtle bark scale, you have to make a decision as to whether or not you're going to use the insecticide that is going to be systemic and be taken up by the tree and therefore be in the tree long enough to deal with some of the pest problem, but also is going to be there when anything else comes along. So we have two approaches, fast and long term. You got to kind of make up your mind about which one is which, and I'm more than happy to help you with the choices for any individual plant or any individual pest. But in general, you got to decide if it's going to work fast or if it's going to work long. If it's going to work long, it's going to have more impact on your pollinators, okay? Because they might come by later. Now, J.J. Kale thinks I'm crazy, and you may too, but that's all right because I'm your garden mama, and this is my show.
Garden mama, where you been so long?
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig
for a flipping good time.
Indeed. A couple of weeks ago, everybody was talking about which ancient rock concerts they went to and, you know, whether or not they were at Woodstock and this and that and the other thing. And I did get to see The Who in their prime, I'm happy to say. That's a powerful, incredible guitar player. Is Pete Townsend just tore it all up.
I love Pete Townsend.
Tore it all
goodness.
Up.
I don't even know how to There's, describe my affinity for his music.
Brilliant, just brilliant, and not an ugly guy either, but doesn't really matter when it comes to a guitar player, you know, you hear it first, but anyway, that's another story.
But I digress.
I didn't know this. There's so many things I don't know. How do you ever learn everything you need to know? I don't even know the answer to this. I truly, honestly did not know that there were gigantic lizards living at the same time as the dinosaurs. I mean, you can figure it. Everything was a little bigger. Apparently there was a lot faster, you know, growth in one thing and another. But this giant lizard that they have just found in the fossil fields in Utah is so big, y'all. Now, hold on. This thing has been named after Tolkien's Goblin Prince. That's how big this thing is. Goblin monster, they're calling it Bolgamundol. Obviously, that's a pretty good one. But who knew these giant Gila monsters, their family that roamed in Utah at the time of the dinosaurs, they've also found a raccoon-sized, armored monstrosaurian, which I'm saying to you right now, I'm going to tell you, I think is where the armadillo came from, but I don't really know that. Just looks like it. Oh, my goodness. The best part of this story. Nobody had to go out and start digging up. Nobody had to write a grant for a dig where they had to get volunteers from all over Utah to come and help do these things. They opened a drawer. I'm telling you, we benefit so much by the things that people stored in drawers in natural science museums. They literally opened the jar of bones labeled lizard at the Natural History Museum of Utah, and there it was. So that's when that started this fellow's work to try and find out what this creature was and how they got there. And that's what the whole work of paleontology really is to understand the ecosystem. But if he'd been in Argentina, he might have found yet another top predator. Patagonia was home to not only dinosaurs and turtles and mammals, but a really big crocodile relative that could crush a dinosaur's leg. No. They didn't tell me which dinosaur, but the idea is that everything was bigger then. And it's a fascinating bit of stuff, the Cretaceous era, if you're interested in studying that time frame. But the prehistoric ecosystems, of course, are what got us here. And that's why they're interesting. I don't think anybody is intending to go back and try to replicate a 70 million year old ecosystem. But it does give you a bit of perspective, doesn't it, that we've been here this long. Maybe we're going to keep at it for a while.
Well, you got to, in that train, you're talking about paleontology. We're going to talk about some plantology here because Miss Anna from Oxford is called.
Oh, good.
And she has three good questions for you. One is relating to eggplant. The other is the Meyer lemon. And a third question will be the Confederate rose. So Fire off, Anna. You ready
good
to go?
Good morning, Anna.
And a third question.
You got to turn it down.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning. You have to turn the radio down.
You
got to
turn the radio down or I got to hang it up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, let me turn it down. You mentioned Confederate rose.
Mm-hmm.
A friend gave me one. It's in a pot, and I haven't moved it anywhere, so I don't know where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
I have different zones all around my house. And I've got two paper bushes. If I put it in between the paper bushes, because they do very well.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be okay?
I think that'll be fine because it'll give you some flowers there at the other end of the season. And they can take about the same circumstances.
Next question.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait a minute. Hold on a second. You understand that Confederate rose is going to drop every leaf and look really terrible for a period of time when the paper bushes are beginning to put their leaves on and start to look nice. But they're not going to be nice at the same time. Just so you know.
Yeah, well, the paper bushes have nice flowers and then
nothing. Yeah, and then that's when
the paper bushes are doing very well. I brought them through the winter somehow.
Good.
I don't know how I did it, but I did it.
They're tougher than they look, just like us.
I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a lot of work because you have to put something around them when it gets really cold. But
yes, they're zone 8 hardy, but they're the farther north in zone 8 you get, the trickier it is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I know. Nobody told me that when I bought them.
Mm-hmm.
In zone 7.
Well, I was going to say, here's the thing. Sometimes they actually do better in zone 7 because they don't get the heat in the summer that wears them out so much.
True.
Okay, so
south-facing wall, but there's trees in front of mm-hmm. them, so that's how they get some shade.
Yeah, your cotton rose will love that. The Confederate rose will love that.
Mm-hmm. So you think the Confederate rose would do nice in between?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Then Meyer lemon. You mentioned Meyer lemon.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two citrus trees. One is meant to be Meyer lemon, and the other one is a grapefruit, which I started from seed 40 or 50 years ago. And
amazing.
Every year, every winter, I bring them into the garage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're very heavy because they're in pots. But you said the Meyer lemon doesn't have thorns?
The rootstock that most citrus trees are very, very thorny. The citrus, the Meyers and a bunch of the other citrus can have some thorns, but they're not going to be like these big sharp things that come out of the base of the plant. That's citrus trifoliata.
But you grew it from seed, right?
The grapefruit came from seed?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't tell about what that's going to be.
But the Meyer lemon I bought in a pot, and I put it in a pot, and it still has thorns. That's one of the problems of dragging it inside.
Right. Does it make fruit?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the fruit, I guess I put them in the garage. There's no flies in the garage to fertilize them, and, you know.
Do they bloom? They bloom in the garage?
And I'm not happy with that, and my husband says, let them die.
Well, you're not likely to do that.
Well, I had the grapefruit. I mean, I was in Chicago. I've been here 25 years. So I was there 27 years, so you know the thing is old. And lastly, I was given some eggplant starts.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where to put them. So I had a pot which had some soil in it, and I put them in that. And they're doing very well. Mm-hmm. I've got little little eggplants on them. But the leaves all have little holes all over them, and mm-hmm. they're kind of not rusty looking, but they're off color. They're not green.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spray the plant. I don't know what these
well, we have a bunch of insects that will get on eggplant leaves, and if they get there late enough that you're already getting the eggplant, we don't worry about it. If it was the beginning of the summer, we'd worry about it because you don't have any eggplant yet. But since you're going to get your harvest, I just wouldn't compost those. I would throw them away so that we don't put any residual stuff into the compost heap that could come back and haunt us next year. But a lot of times they'll get eaten up. I grow the green eggplants, the one that I like, but once or twice their leaves have been entirely skeletonized, you know, like a hibiscus can get. I have no idea which sawfly or some other critter did it, but the eggplants were fine already, so I didn't worry about it. And I have seen that as an instruction to farmers is if you're about to pick them, you don't want to spend the money on the spray, and you also don't want to contaminate the fruit. So just enjoy it and get rid of them.
Eggplants are, they're smaller, they're about the size of a child's fist, okay? Mm-hmm. They're not very big.
Well, some eggplants are that small.
I've got two or three.
Yeah, some eggplants are that small, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, they are in a pot, and I wonder what I should fertilize them with.
You can fertilize them with whatever you feed other vegetables. If you have a granular, you know, 5-10-10, you can work that in, or you can water them with something. It doesn't. They're related to tomatoes and potatoes, and they're going to react the same way. They're going to grow fast, and then when it gets cold, they're going to stop.
Yeah. Well, the tomatoes didn't do very well this year.
It was not the best of the best years.
Unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately, I had zinnia seeds in the same plot. I threw them out a couple of years ago. They come up every year. The tomatoes are now being they're controlled by the zinnias, I think. I mean, they're not doing very well.
Sounds pretty, though.
Very disappointed.
He doesn't like to eat zinnias.
I'm hoping now it's somewhat cool. It was just too hot. You couldn't get enough water.
Well, I really do think the fall crop is better in most parts of our listening area. It's just the spring was tough. My hat is off to the folks that grow them.
Because my husband's very disappointed. The one thing he looks forward to is fresh tomatoes.
Well, you got time, so
there's I hope. Well, nice talking
Thank
to you.
Thank you, ma'am. Good
and
to
I'll
hear from you.
Try again another time.
Take care now. You know, the thing about putting that Confederate rose in that planting space is so smart, and Anna's always so smart, but she's so smart about this because it's going to give interest in that area at the time of the year that, frankly, the paper bushes have just turned into green blobs. But it's also going to give flowers that grow up. You know, the paper bushes tend to be blooming on the edges of their branches and whatnot in the sense that they make a kind of an oval-shaped top on the plant, whereas Confederate rose goes up straight, much taller, and that will be a really nice thing to have. I like that. Really good idea. Very, very good idea. There's so many things to celebrate. You know, I realize that we're rolling into football season and people are going to be talking about, you know, what they're eating and who they're going to the game with and what they're playing and all of these other wonderful, wonderful things that are very important, you know, things that we need to talk about and enjoy and appreciate. Just take that 1 hour a day for the garden. Give yourself that 1 hour a day, no matter what else is going on. Get out and walk the garden. You might do something, you might not. You might just literally walk around and look at things. It will center you. It will keep you on top of any problems that the garden is having, and it'll let you celebrate the successes that you might miss if you're not there. So I really think that the busier things get, the more we need our gardens. And I hope that you will. I hope you'll take my advice and do the same at your place. I have a question for you, Lance.
Fire it off.
You got how many franchises does McDonald's have?
Ooh.
Today is National Franchise Appreciation Day.
Sure. I don't know. What would we be talking about? 50,000 maybe?
Man, I've only got sales figures, but I have to tell you the most locations actually comes up to be Subway. Subway's been in the news a lot lately, as you probably have noticed.
Their menu.
But there are more than 20,000 Subways franchises in this country.
In this, okay, I was thinking we were talking McDonald's globally. I would.
Well, that the, McDonald's globally has like $130-some-odd billion in sales, and that's more. I'm sure that's more locations. But it's the biggest in the U.S. by revenue. That's not worldwide. That's just that's their sales, rather, is worldwide. But they are the biggest in the U.S. because of that. However, you know who's third, don't you, on this list?
Ward's.
No. You were hoping.
Yeah, I was hoping. Actually, I love it's this little secret, you know.
Starbucks.
Ah, okay.
Now, that's because there was a Starbucks on every corner there for a while.
There was.
I went to Philadelphia. Couldn't get off. They said, get off the bus by Starbucks. Well, that was a really bad direction.
That blend that you gave me, you and Claire put together?
Yeah.
Man, I loved Mama that. That
you was like the, that?
Yes. I need another bag of that if
well,
you don't.
Well, trust me. Oh. It's coming.
Good. I'd like to hear that.
I can't help it. I'm a coffee drinker.
Oh, yeah, it was delicious. You had it in a little Ziploc, but I was a big fan of the blend. What was it, like Guatemalan and – I can't remember.
I wish I could tell you which portions it was, but it's Costa Rican and
it
Guatemalan.
It smelled so good.
But it does smell good. My car smelled like it for about a day after
nothing wrong with that. Keep y'all
lovely.
Woke up and ready to go.
That's right. But, yeah, we are working, y'all. For those of you who are coffee drinkers and everybody's, you know, oh, no, the coffee's so expensive. Well, okay, then you'll be able to afford Garden Mama.
There you go.
So we're working on that.
And hey, I'm telling you, folks, when it's available, you got to try it. It was extremely delicious, and I drink coffee every day. And
several
I've been
times.
To about a pot and a half. I've been to every coffee shop you can possibly go to. And this stuff was good.
Well, we just want to outdo everybody.
Got to.
Don't forget, I'm telling you about September 20th for the event in Renaissance in Ridgeland. We'll be back. We got a little bit more to talk about this morning. Stick around.
Can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, even in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But tonight it's a different world, go out and find a girl. Come on, and dance all night, just like the heat, it'll be all right. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the night.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Would say, and then they're going to yell at me.
No, of course. You thought I'd forgotten to play a little Cajun today.
I knew it'd be there eventually, sir. Thank
you. I wanted
you
to parachute out with that one.
Appreciate you. This is a great question from Corinne in Jackson. Pumpkin vine growing, but no female pumpkins yet. In other words, no female flowers that have the pumpkin attached to them. If they ever appear, I guess I need to hand pollinate, right? How do you do that? Well, this is real simple. This is literally the paintbrush out of the box that the pastels come in for your child, you know, or the watercolors or any of those things, just a little bitty brush. And, or you can use a swab, like a Q-tip thing. You're literally going to just take the pollen off the male flower, put it on the female. It's real simple. When you look at it, you go, oh, look at that. There's that pollen. And sure enough, you go over and you'll see the receptors on the female. But she's also read that I may need to bury the vine. Do you think that that's necessary? I've read that before and I've never done it. So if anybody has an idea about it, you know, let us know. We'll be happy to pass that on to Corinne. And Brandon and Jude from Boonville, thank you very much for riding along, listening this morning. Appreciate that very, very much. I got to tell you, my dad was a football coach, and this was a big point of the year, needless to say, for us. It went on all year for us, but it was a big point in the year when we had the opportunity to actually go watch people play. It's a ton of fun, ton of fun. Let's see. We should be here. Well, of course we should be there. Wherever there is, we should always be there. All right. We're going to wrap this into a nice little tiny package that almost I could not have predicted this any better. We've talked about Confederate Rose. We talked about the cotton hibiscus is the other name for that one. Cotton rose is another one. But, you know, they're all mallows. They're all hibiscus. The mallow family, the hibiscus family we talked about last week, the Turk's caps, all those things are all in the mallow family because when you split them open, there's stuff inside those stems that is sticky and mallowy. And then when you get into the root, it's even more that way. Okay? Traditionally, that kind of gluey root was where marshmallow came from, and that's where it got the name marshmallow because they made it from that. I'm adding this now to my list of things. Who put the first olive into the keg? Who cracked open the first oyster? And who scraped up the marshmallow root and innards and decided they were going to eat it? Now, come on.
Come on now.
This is crazy. Now, the plant itself has been in the world of homeopathic medicines and whatnot. It's an inflammation reducer and various and sundry other things. Probably need that on my toe today, but I don't happen to have that. But anyway, and also for coughs and things, it was famous, but for that, an aristocratic dessert in Egypt. I mean, this was all this, and this is strictly from the marshmallow plants. This
well, anytime you start talking about aristocrats deal. Eating it, you know, that's Look a down. Big deal.
Well, you know, they have tasters.
Exactly. Yeah, so. They had somebody out searching for the greatest tastes and spices.
Exactly. And you have to try it first.
It's on you.
That's right. Now, however, the good news is the starch mogul system that they developed allowed them to do a whole lot more, but it's not nearly as romantic as the notion of people trying to make a treat for the Queen of Egypt, you know. This is the modern marshmallows or this stuff, and it's extruded, and it's a marshmallow. But what about marshmallow fluff? Come on now, you know that's the best fudge in the world, or divinity, whichever one you make.
Or that little tub of marshmallow stuff.
That's the fluff.
Yeah, the fluff.
That's
that.
The stuff. Do you know that that started as something they sold door to door in 1917? Think about the first person that knocked on somebody's door and said, "Hi, I want to show you this marshmallow.
Here, put your finger in this and taste it." The taste buds just exploded.
It's crazy.
Like, what is this? This is new.
So it was new. It was manufactured in Lynn, Massachusetts, which is a place that's famous for a lot of things, but not necessarily, I didn't realize, for fluff. But it's still made there today.
Wow, that's cool.
So when you go to fill out that fudge recipe on the back, you can count on the fact that they've made this thing a lot. They have definitely done that. Ooh, came up from old pumpkins, picked 3 pie pumpkins 2 weeks ago. Now, that is a plan there. Wonder if it was the compost or if you planted them before. That's interesting. That is very cool. I'm glad y'all are able to do 2 things at once. That's funny. Y'all are great.
Hey, do you have any recommendations for a yellow jacket nest in a yard?
I do. I was going to try to get back down to that one. This is one of those things. They're in the ground at night, and this is one of those things where you go, you don't get anything else. You go and get Liquid 7, S-E-V-I-N, the insecticide. Get the 10% if they have it, 5% is okay if they don't. This is what you pour it. You mix it up. You pour it into the hole after they've gone to bed. And then 2 or 3 days later, you'll be able to dig the thing out, and it'll be bigger than you can imagine, and they are beautiful, beautiful nests. really powerful sights to see that they were able to do that in your yard.
Same thing with, say, between cracks in a, you know, in a driveway where they get down in there and things of that
nature. If they're able to, if they have an exit there, you can get
them. Where you pour it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They're very clever creatures. And frankly, they'll hurt you. You have to wait until they're gone to bed. And they do. They're pretty routine. After dark, you have to. Here's the other thing. You hear these stories from people. Well, I thought I knew where it was. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
eight of them are on your ankle.
Exactly. Maybe you want to mark where the nest is before dark. That sounds so simplistic. But you think, well, I know where that is. I'll just go out there. And then the next thing you know, you've stepped in the nest and you're in the emergency room, you know, having a terrible reaction. So that's really the answer to that, is to use the Liquid 7. And it's very effective. It's one of the few things that I would suggest doing that I wouldn't use for anything else. Just wouldn't do that. Absolutely wouldn't do that. There's a lot of things going on in my garden this week. I won't be walking around for too many of them because I blew up my foot, but that's another story for another day. I am, however, planting some seeds, and I hope you are too, whether it's mustard greens or if you're all ready to do turnip greens, you might be doing beets. I'm doing tender greens. I'm doing Swiss chard. So I hope that you all will as well. It's a great week for planting all those things. And a lot of people have Monday off for the Labor Day, and but trust me, the garden centers will all be open. No question about that. Do you ever wonder, well, you know, I found things when I was moving. I don't like to blame everything on my late husband, but apparently he never threw away a battery in his life. I don't know what. I don't know. There was a bag full of them.
That was his thing.
Then there was a box full of them. He couldn't throw away power cords either. I have power cords to things that don't exist. But anyway, interestingly enough, they're finding ways to recycle dead batteries. I don't think I'm going to have a trove here of anything that's worth a lot of money. But wouldn't that be great if we could actually just take those discarded batteries? You know, they've still got a lot of good stuff in them. They just won't hold a charge. And it would be wonderful if we could find a way to recycling them to keep those emissions from getting out into the environment and really to give us another resource to use. There are a few things like that that you just think, okay, well, somebody probably did keep all of the, oh, it was at my house. So if you have them all, you may want to keep up with this work from Edith Cowan University. It's going to be tough, though. Like my grandmother, who would prefer to start a new dress than to alter someone's old clothing or, you know, previously not fitting clothing. We got to talk about these batteries. Will they ever work as well? I don't know. Today's word is lithium. Y'all check it out. We'll see you next week on the Garden Mama Show.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
A
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.